Chapter 33. Aspen. Aspen felt something inside himself relax as he heard Silas' small voice. He had been terrified that he was too late, and he had already lost his too fragile adoptive child, in spite of Rouge's assurance that the bat was still alive. There was, after all, a large chasm of uncertainty between alive and well. He glanced up at the moons even as he dodged yet another blow from one of the bone golems, who were still relentlessly tracking him. The only good thing about the horrors was that no one else dared try to reach him, since the golems used their own allies as fodder as readily as they would an enemy. Several cultists and a few travelers had already died grisly deaths as the golems simply moved through them, sucking up the corpses for growth material. From here south was that way. He turned and pulled a burst of speed from his flagging stamina, leaping ahead of a crushing blow aimed at his back. He had already seen the telltale flicker of light indicating that he had gained a point in something, and he rather suspected that if he survived this night, his stamina and endurance would be nearly back to what they had been before Akuji began draining him. Of course that didn't help him right now, but he held grimly to the thought as a narrow ray of light on a very, very bad day. "Stay back, Silas," he sent. "We're on our way. Just don't attack, whatever you do. We need a scout right now. We need you, since you can find Akuji. You have to stay up there to be our eyes. Don't sacrifice yourself for nothing," he urged silently, knowing that if he spoke the words, the sensitive little bat would believe he meant she should stay out of the way and let the real warriors do the work. To his surprise, Silas just replied, "I know." There was a pause, and then she added, "I'm glad you're back, but I'm mad at you." A lopsided grin crossed his face as he finally made his way out of the southern edge of the besieging encampment. "I love you too, Silas." A few quiet sniffles came over the chat, though he wasn't sure exactly who had produced them. He was finally able to pick up speed now that he wasn't surrounded by enemies, tents, old campfires, and the random detritus left behind when any group sets up for a long period of time. "We're stuck," Rouge said, voice frustrated. "We're holding our own for now, but we've barely moved a dozen feet since we started trying to go south. There are just too many of them." Aspen's eyes widened as he topped a low hill and looked down the road ahead of him. The steady light of 100 glowstones illuminated a wall of people heading in his direction. They were riding, jumping, dancing, and in one notable case, hovering in midair while a friend pulled them along by a string tied around their middle. "Travelers," he sent, stumbling to a halt. "Lots of them, heading your way." He threw himself off the road, using a gentle push of mana to convince the plants nearby to help him hide. The front edge of the onrushing horde reached him and flowed past, while woody branches sheltered him from the boots of unknowing people. Raucous laughter, singing, and whoops of excitement crested and faded. "I hope they're on our side," Mott said grimly. "I'm running low on stamina, and if I stop to pop a potion, we'll be overrun." Aspen stared after the madding crowd and shook his head. He crawled out from under the protective branches, sending the helpful plants a small pulse of grateful magic. "I don't know. You travelers are all insane. All I can say is that I saw no cultists' robes among them." Rouge sounded desperately hopeful. "That had better be Group B. Lyrex already down, and Fluff's in bad shape. She's not a close combat fighter." "I shall be well, Lady Rouge," Fluff panted out. "'Tis but a flesh wound." "Your arm's off, Fluff," Wikiwee yelled. "Hold on, I have a reattachment device." "Ah, what are your pain settings?" "Proceed with the treatment, fair friend," the archer replied. "This body can bear it, though my soul may weep." Aspen would have laughed at the interplay if the topic weren't so serious. He shook his head at the lunacy of travelers, then cursed as he heard indications of yet another group traveling on the road ahead of him. Once again he leapt into the bushes, and a prickly gorse bush cocooned him in protective thorns. "More travelers," Aspen said as they came into view. "There are cultists, and they have some of Chris' twisted monsters with them as well. If the first group was your friends, Rouge, this group definitely is not." "Ha," Mott said fiercely. "The first group just made it here. These are definitely on our side. They're laying into Akuji's forces like a hot knife through butter. Some of these folks are probably even higher level than Doom. Not a lot of straight fighter types, but at high enough levels, even crafters are a force to be reckoned with." "Ooh," Rouge squealed excitedly. "Mages. That was a thundercloud. It's a top-tier area of effect spell. I've never actually seen it done before. I hate to burst your bubble, Aspen said somberly, as the enemy continued flowing past his hiding place in a rushing torrent. But there are a lot more enemies coming. This must be the rest of Akuji's army. Mott growled. We have to go. Now Rouge. If we're going to reach Akuji, this is it. Once reinforcements arrive, it'll be chaos, and we'll really be trapped here until the end. Go, Doombloom put in voice calm. We'll clear a path for you. Wikiwee didn't sound quite as confident, but she was still cheerful as she said, Sure. If we bite it, we'll head back in as soon as our death delay is up. Indeed, Fluff said. Though I do wish I could join you as you challenge this foul blemish upon our glorious land, I shall defend you in our fair city, unto my final breath. Don't forget me, Tassel put in abruptly. Several people called her name in welcome, and Aspen could hear the smile in her voice as she went on. I have a skill I hardly ever get to use. It's called Axe Blender, and it takes all of my defensive stats and applies them to my attack instead. It's a last-ditch skill, of course, since I'm almost guaranteed to get killed if anyone survives, but I only have 15 minutes before my break is over, so I might as well go out in a blaze of glory, right? Get out of the way because I actually start spinning like a blender, and anything nearby is going to be chopped. The last of the mob rushing toward refuge vanished over the hill, and Aspen stood from concealment once again. As he settled into a ground-eating run, a chorus of disgusted groans came over party chat. Aspen assumed that Tessel had used her ferocious spinning axe attack, with predictably gory results. We're on our way, Mott said, deep voice sounding queasy. Don't save the world without us. Aspen caught up to Silas just before the narrowest part of the pass, where the avalanche and sinkhole had combined to kill so many of Akuji's forward troops. The place was empty of life now that all of the travelers and the remnants of the attacking army had left for refuge. That did not, however, mean that nothing was moving. When Aspen had been a necromancer, he had been able to sense areas where large numbers of people or animals had perished. Akuji undoubtedly had a similar ability, and the Lich had stopped in the abandoned camp his people had used while they worked to build a ramp from the edge of the pitfall to the top of the rockfall. As Aspen began to round the bluff just before the chasm, something flew into his face. He muffled a yell, raising his hands to fend off whatever it was, but stopped as he recognized the small, trembling form he held. Silas was covered in cuts and scratches, many of which looked like they had been inflicted by arrows she had only narrowly managed to dodge. The worst, however, was a jagged tear in one wing. The fragile wing thumb was visibly broken, and Aspen was amazed that the bat had been able to fly in this condition, much less rally herself to use skills and track a murderous lich lord. Cradling the shivering creature to his chest, Aspen stopped in the shadow of the stones surrounding them. Tenderly, he brushed the red-tinged silver fur away from her ears, pouring healing mana into her wounds. Shish, Silas. You did well, my love. Rest now. Silas' body slowly stopped shuddering in his hands, and she raised exhausted golden eyes to his. He's raising the dead. All those who died in the trap here, including those big monsters that look like Kor but with three heads and a snake for a tail. She shuddered again but for a different reason, and Aspen chuckled, relief flooding him. What do you mean they look like me? The belligerent voice was unmistakable, and Aspen turned to see the goat trotting up the road, looking even more disgruntled than usual. What did you think you were doing, chasing after that overconfident skeletal Hercismus? Hercismus? Aspen asked in bemusement. I told you that's not how you use it, a sharp voice interrupted, and a 4-foot spider jumped down from Kor's broad back. Nuisance, who was in his usual place atop Kor's head, even though he really didn't fit anymore, squawked grumpily as Sumi brushed by. Aspen felt his chest clench at the sight of the arachnid, and he reached out to gently stroke the cobalt fur atop her abdomen. As he did, something stirred in the shadows, and tiny fangs clicked just short of his hand. Sumi hissed in annoyance. Stop that. I went through a lot of trouble to make sure you weren't feral, so listen when I talk to you. This is Aspen, and you aren't allowed to bite him. What? Aspen had no idea where to even begin, but Sumi waved a foreleg dismissively. I'll explain the rest later, but for now, just know that I got the reproduction quest after that last molt. Generally, spiderlings are uncontrollable and vicious. I almost had to leave and raise the horrid brood elsewhere, so they wouldn't infest the area around refuge and eat everyone. Fortunately, the dungeon was able to provide me with information on how to get around that. Now I only have 5 of the little brats instead of hundreds, and they're far more intelligent than the mindless multitude. Unfortunately, I also got a quest to keep at least 3 of them alive into adulthood, which will be difficult, because they're even more prone to foolhardy choices than those ridiculous unicorns. Sumi's tone was derisive but affectionate as she finished, and Aspen could only shake his head. "Why didn't you just tell me?" The arachnid clicked her fangs. "And have you insist on going into the dungeon with me? Or at least sending someone else in as well? No time, no manpower, and if I failed but survived, I would have to leave without you anyway. It was better this way." Rouge sounded disgruntled when she said, "I wish I could have gone with you. That sounds like a fun dungeon run." The elf girl and her father loomed up out of the darkness behind Kor. Rouge rode Codswallop, who was noticeably larger, with a more magnificent sweep to his fluffy tail. The bird had obviously leveled more than once tonight. "I hate to break up the reunion," Mott said, "but we barely dodged those bone golems on the way here. They're slow but tenacious, and the longer we stand here, the more undead Akuji has time to raise." Aspen looked around at his friends. Silas, who clung to his shirt as if she'd never let go again. Kor, tall and proud, with his mighty curled horns silhouetted against the double moons. Sumi, who was using her legs to corral her scurrying offspring as they attempted to investigate the area. Rouge, who was practically quivering with suppressed energy, ready to go, as always. And Mott, firm and strong, seeming as eternal as the mountain on which they stood. Filled with equal parts trepidation and determination, Aspen turned toward the curve in the narrow road ahead. "Then let's go. We have a villain to slay." Akuji stood atop a small watchtower. The building was only 2 stories high, and it had been shoddily built from piled stone rather than wood, since wood was a far scarcer commodity in these arid climes. A narrow stone staircase wound around the outside of what was essentially a rocky mound, and the Lich Lord had climbed up so that he could more easily see the results of his handiwork. Zombies and animated skeletons milled around the base of the tower. They shuffled aside each time a newly summoned monster clambered from the gaping sinkhole. It looked like the army had attempted to simply fill the hole in using the stones knocked loose by the avalanche, but had quickly discovered that the hole was far too deep and the stones too massive to move easily. The lingering traces of the attempt made it easy for even these uncoordinated undead to escape their charnel pit. Honestly, while the shambling undead were dangerous in large numbers, Aspen knew that he, Kor, and presumably Mott had experience dealing with them. Once their limbs were severed or their heads crushed, they weren't much of a threat. It was the ghouls that made Aspen hesitate. Ghouls rose from the bodies of those who had had greater than average power in life. Often, that meant they had been mages, and some trace of their former abilities usually lingered past death. While they were still as mindless as the simple zombies, they could follow more complex commands, and more importantly, their touch could drain life points and skills just like a lich, though not as quickly. If they were able to grasp a victim for more than a few seconds, however, the depletion would begin, and it was rare for someone to escape without assistance. "Mott and Kor, take the zombies and skeletons. Your axe and hooves will take them down the fastest. Kor, once the ones up here are gone, focus on keeping any more from coming out of that hole." Mott nodded, but Kor rolled back a lip from his square yellow teeth. "I hate zombies. The gunk gets in my fur." Aspen gave the goat a flat look, and Kor huffed. "Fine. Rouge, is your Mombele holy?" Rouge blinked. I don't know. I mean, my examine skill isn't that great, and no one else can touch it, so I haven't had it appraised or anything. It is a gift from Gina, so, maybe? Why do you ask?" Aspen looked at the weapon she held, which glowed faintly in his life sense. He'd noticed the effect several times before, but had always been distracted by something trying to kill them before he had a chance to mention it. If it is, it should be able to do extra damage to the ghouls and be able to hit any ghosts Akuji manages to summon. It's worth a try. A broad grin stretched across the girl's face. That would be so cool. I mean, her eyes went calculating. Haven't I used it on undead before? That Panganoon for sure. Aspen nodded. You would have dealt more damage to those than an equivalent weapon without the holy attribute, but it could be difficult to tell for certain. You'll know as soon as you attack one of the ephemeral undead, though. A normal non-silver weapon will pass through them or do negligible damage. Rouge flipped her weapon from hand to hand gleefully. This is gonna be epic. Aspen just shook his head. Don't be overconfident. It's not a certainty yet. If you can't hit them, then focus on the more tangible enemies, and I'll try to come up with something for the ghosts. He looked at Sumi, eyeing the scurrying patches of darkness on her body dubiously. Sumi. I'll bind the zombies and ghouls, the spider said firmly. Don't worry about me. Finally, Aspen touched Silas' soft back. I need you to be our eyes, Silas. Let us know where the enemy is, especially if one is coming up behind someone. Silas squeaked her understanding, small chest puffing out proudly. I can do it. Aspen turned toward their foe, gripping stick firmly and rolling his shoulders in a vain attempt to release some tension. Just before he could take the first step into the open, Mott reached out and grasped his shoulder. You don't have to face him alone, the big man rumbled softly. Aspen looked around. I'm not alone anymore. He grinned, feeling strangely lighthearted, and ran toward Akuji. The Lich Lord saw them almost immediately. I wondered when you'd come, Yorgas, he called, raising his bony arms. The heavy folds of his tattered red velvet robe fell backwards, and moonlight turned the skeletal limbs to silver. As one, his summoned minions turned to face Aspen and his friends, then began stumbling forward. Mott and Kor moved to the front of the group. No, you didn't, Aspen returned mockingly. You ran here, abandoning your army when you saw there was even a chance they could be defeated. As soon as you thought you were clear, you started building a new army. All to protect you, because you're a coward, Akuji. You know that with your rock shattered and having lost Chester's soul, you're finally vulnerable. Yellow teeth clacked angrily, and Akuji opened his right hand. His enormous sword appeared in his palm, and he gripped it and raised it high. I am wise, Yorgas. Only a fool chooses to face even possible doom. Yet here you are again. Mott and Kor tore into the front lines of the enemy. Mott's axe took the legs out from under swaths of zombies, while Kor's lightning-quick hooves crushed bony skulls like balloons at the fair. Flickering filmy shapes appeared in the air, and Rouge's Mombele flashed out. The girl's triumphant shout told Aspen his guess had been correct. Akuji's skull whipped around, the golden flame in his eye sockets flaring as he watched one of his revenants vanish into the ether. Aspen cursed himself for not realizing that Rouge's weapon was a threat to Akuji himself as well. There was no way the Lich Lord would ignore someone who could injure him from a distance. As much as the Lich hated Aspen, Rouge was now Akuji's top priority. As Aspen watched, Akuji's long fingerbone raised to point directly at the Traveler girl. Instantly, every one of his undead spawn turned toward Rouge, who went a little pale, but then simply firmed her grip on Codswallop's reins and bared her teeth at the oncoming multitude. Mott, who was standing between the mob and his daughter, saw what was happening and pulled a massive pavise shield from his inventory. His two-handed axe vanished as well, and he raised the shield in both hands, bringing it down so that its bottom edge buried itself in the soft earth. A brilliant flare rose from the shield, and Mott bellowed, his deep, powerful voice carrying over the entire killing field. Instantly, every one of the enemies refocused on him, and the horde took a few stumbling steps in his direction. Akuji's burning gaze flared, and he clenched his skeletal fist. His minions stopped, then split, attempting to circle around the warrior so that they could reach Rouge. Rouge, seeing that the taunt had failed, leaned forward over her ostrich's fluffy back. Time seemed to slow as Codswallop's throat swelled hugely, and he released a booming sound that eclipsed Mott's earlier bellow. The bird took two long steps, then launched himself into the air, his short wings spread wide, and Rouge raised her Mombele, obviously readying herself to attack Akuji directly. Akuji flicked his hand almost nonchalantly, and wraiths formed from the air as though summoned from the chaos pool itself. The diaphanous creatures swirled around Rouge, wrapping her in a gossamer blanket that Aspen knew from experience was made of pure pain. The girl screamed, sounding surprised and frightened. Everyone moved toward her at once. If the wraiths weren't driven off her in the next few seconds, they would begin draining her. Not only would she be effectively eaten alive, but her torment would increase a hundredfold. Mott summoned a long silver broadsword, which glowed with violet ether. It was clearly enchanted, but Aspen knew such weapons, while effective, would also be quickly worn down by the power of the wraiths. Kor suddenly left alone to face the zombies, lashed out with hooves and horns, flinging undead bodies everywhere. he would fall soon enough, brought low by the sheer number of mindless foes he faced. Sumi spun her webs as quickly as she could, entangling legs and closing gaping maws with gobs of sticky fluid, but there was no way she could trap enough of them to save the goat. High above, Silas saw what was happening, and dove, mouth wide as she used screech. The disorienting attack wouldn't work on the unintelligent zombies, but a few of the wraiths wavered, then turned their attention toward the little bat. They flew toward her descending form, and Aspen saw the tiny wing shape falter as the first wraith wrapped its insubstantial form around Silas. Something inside Aspen snapped. "Gina," he shouted, and threw wide both his life sense and his spirit sense. Instantly, he was flooded with the horrible, almost viscous scum he'd felt each time he used his spirit sense on anything touched by Apophis. He choked, struggling to breathe through the clammy muck that seemed to fill his lungs. This was why he hadn't wanted to use this power, though he knew it might let him see the undead in some way. Which it did, at least for those in which some spark of spirit still remained. The zombies were as empty as ever, but the wraiths, ghosts, and even Akuji, now that his soul was returned to him, were horribly apparent in this altered vision. His life sense was as blind to their undeath as ever, but to his spirit sense, their spirits were visible as leprous masses, dripping with foul contagion and putrefaction. Aspen couldn't force words from his throat, blocked as it was with bile and corruption, but he cried out mentally. "Bueno! Clarity!" The fetid masses that monopolized his vision froze, and the weaker ones flickered, edges shifting from inky black to charcoal gray. The dimming cascade of ones and zeros that represented rouge was briefly visible through the leprous darkness that engulfed her. Mott was still moving toward her, his light like a beacon in the growing gloom. At the edge of Aspen's terrifying sinister vision, the tiny brilliant light that represented Silas flickered and vanished. Whether she was dead or merely fully engulfed by wraiths, Aspen couldn't tell. And it barely mattered, because one would become the other momentarily, and he couldn't. Aspen reached out to the life he knew was all around him. The darkness concealed it, but he had been in this place before, and he had touched a million billion minute spirits. He had urged them to safety as the sinkhole opened, and they knew him. They accepted him willingly, as one of their own. Saplings bent and twisted, swelling into trees in an instant. Vines writhed and reached for the foul things that invaded their home. Worms, grubs, spores, seeds, beetles, lizards, even field mice and voles eagerly joined together. Plants of all kinds shot into tumescence, grasping and ripping at Aspen's enemies, while all the tiny forgotten lives took in the mana that flowed from Aspen like a raging flood breaking through a battered dam. Light ate the darkness. The polluting clouds of evil were shredded by uncountable smaller sources of life, and Rouge's bright column reappeared, slightly dimmer but intact. To Aspen's great relief, Silas too came into sight amidst the tatters of shadow, though her light was significantly dimmer and flickered dangerously. Aspen poured power into his tiny precious child. She was not his blood, not even his species, but she was his to love, to protect, and yes, to someday let go when she was ready, but that day was not today. Silas lit up like a small sun, blindingly brilliant, warm and clean. There was only one source of darkness remaining. Aspen turned his bizarrely inverted gaze toward the Lich Lord. After losing his soul gem and Chester, the monstrous form was strangely diminished, reduced to a hard core of obsidian so deep that not a single mote of light could touch it. Rouge's binary pillar moved toward that seed of darkness. The clear pale glow of her mombele left her hand. Dimly, Aspen wondered if he had somehow made Akuji's rotten soul manifest, because Rouge's odd goddess-given weapon spun directly for it. Weapon and soul met, and the soul shattered. Splinters of decaying corruption flew out in a spray of malignant shrapnel, but the cage of light that had formed from those small lives that answered Aspen's silent cry for aid caught each one, subsuming it in a bioluminescent flood until it dissolved and was swept away, carrying Aspen with it. Darkness defeated, the light rejoiced. Billions of small souls touched, danced, sang in delight. Aspen distantly felt the corners of his own mouth turn up, and he was inundated with alien delight and satisfaction. His perception filled with untold shades of colors he had never known existed, and too exhausted to resist, even if he had wanted to, Aspen slipped into the cacophony of elation and was lost.